Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our City Council meeting on July 11, 2011. And we appreciate you being here very much. And as we go through our agenda, if you'd like to speak on any issue that we are talking about, you may certainly do that. If you will, please just raise your hand at appropriate time, and we'll recognize you and come up to the podium here and just give us your name. And what we try to do is hold our comments to 5 minutes so that, you know, we can get through our meeting, but also we can allow everyone that wants to speak adequate time to speak. And we appreciate you doing that as much as possible. Okay, as we begin our meeting, we'll have council prayer and Pledge of Allegiance.
Our eternal God and Father, as we look to you this evening, we come to you with thanksgiving in our hearts for your goodness toward us, for your wisdom and guidance when we've lost our way, for your forgiveness and love when we have failed you, for your mercy and grace, which has no end. We ask you tonight to be with us during this meeting, that you would give us clarity of mind as we discuss these issues relative to our city, that in our hearts and in our minds we would do what is best for our citizens, for our great city, that when we leave here this evening, it'll be a better place to live than it was before. We just ask your blessings upon everything that's done here tonight. And we ask these things in your name.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary to the agenda this evening? If not, do we have a motion and a second, please?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All in favor, show of hands, please. Okay. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Consideration of the minutes of the regular meeting of June 27th, 2011. Any discussion on those minutes?
I'd like to make a motion for them to be approved as written, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. We have a second. Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. On the presentations, we have two this evening. The first one will be the South Carolina DOT report on the results from the May 26, 2011 meeting, public information meeting, I should say, on Silver Bluff Road widening. This is a project we've been working on with SCDOT for some time, and we're making progress on it now on Silver Bluff. Kevin, would you like to, Kevin?
Mayor, is Mr. Gann is coming up to the microphone. Council will recall that we've been working on this since September 2007. Originally, DOT had proposed a five-lane widening project. We've had a series of meetings and input from our citizens, and the current proposals for a three-lane widening project. It was felt that a public information session would be helpful, and that was held on May 26 of this year. As a result of that public information session, SCDOT has received over 193 public comments. The next stages in the proposal to widen Silver Bluff are a letter of concurrence from the city that the project proceed. The next step will be an environmental study, and that takes about 6 months to complete. And the council action tonight would be a motion to allow you, Mayor, to sign that letter of concurrence to SCDOT so they can begin to conduct the environmental study of the Silver Bluff Road Corridor widening project. Again, this is not a final determination of the project. It's just going on to the next step. so that there can be a formal public hearing once that report is received, and again, that'll be time for additional public output. So I just want to be clear, this does not go to the merits of the project, this is merely a presentation of the results from that May 26th meeting and an opportunity for council to approve your signing a letter of concurrence on the project as we routinely do with DOT projects so that we can proceed with that environmental study and public, formal public hearing on the results of that study. Mr. Gant's here, and I think the assistant city manager has handed out a project summary sheet for council's review. Mr. Gant.
Thank you, Richard. I think Richard did a very good job of doing my entire presentation.
Well, I won't charge extra for that.
But since I'm here, I will do an overview of where we are to this point. If you'll look at the screen, this is just an overview of the project, just a map of where we're trying to make the improvements. That Silver Bluff Road, and the project is about a mile and a half along this corridor, which proceeds from Richardson Lake at the south end that begins the project and progresses north to just past Town Creek. And what we're gonna do is try to widen this, as Richard spoke to earlier, three lanes all the way through this quarter, and then make some improvements at particular intersections. I'm going to give you a summary. Going back to 2007, we've actually conducted three public information meetings on this project. The initial, as we spoke of earlier, was for a five-lane project. Again, that was back in 2007. When we received the comments from the public, they were not favorable for this project. So we went back to the Arts Committee with direction from the city, of course, and we changed the purpose and need of the project. We went from a capacity project, which would widen it, which the public was not in favor of, to corridor improvements, which address spot intersections to make the corridor operate better. So we took those comments back, we redesigned the plans, came back in September of 2009. At that meeting, we presented corridor improvements, which at particular intersections, I'll say Town Creek, Outlet Drive, and also at Richardson Lake, bless you. And we came back with some a report from traffic, and we addressed all those concerns, and we presented those at that meeting. The results from that meeting were much more favorable, and then we went back to the Arts Committee for our direction, and the summary there was for us to advance, but to do it by minimizing the right-of-way impacts and also using a three-lane section throughout the quarter. We took the summary of those results, went back to the drawing board, and as Richard spoke of, we just had our last public information meeting on May 26th of 2011. At that meeting, we showed two alternatives. It was the alternative about the center line, and then another alternative which minimized right-of-way impacts at a particular intersection at Hartwell Drive. We took the public comment, and overwhelmingly, the majority of the comments showed that the public would like to see the project progress about the center line. I think from my memory, it was less right-of-way impacts total, and that was basically the summary. Our path forward from this point, the DOT has worked diligently with the City of Aiken through the Arts MPO, and tonight I'm here to ask for your concurrence. And that will give us the authority we need to move forward as directed by the Arts Committee to advance these plans and finish the environmental document, and it gets us to a public hearing. As Richard said, none of this is final until we conclude the environmental process. So if we go forward with this and we receive comments from the public, all of those comments have to be addressed at that hearing before the Federal Highway Administration will bless this project, so to speak, and let us have the funds to go ahead into design and ultimately construction. And so that's what we have. If any of the council members have any questions, I'd be glad to address those.
Kevin, do you have the numbers, the percent numbers with you?
Actually, I left those at the meeting we had last week, but I do know some of them off the top of my head.
They are in the council packet that we attached to my memo.
I would go with approximately 55% of the 193 comments were in favor of the changes being made about the existing center line. I want to say 26, Richard.
That's right, 26%.
We're in favor of the shift. And it's broken down on the summary that we gave you, the amount of the other comments.
Right. And I think that's just so the record's complete, we had 5% that were just opposed to the project, period. And then 14% that had no opinion on either approach to the widening.
Right. Some of those could have been for something that we weren't addressing specifically, so they wouldn't have shown up in the comments. So.
Okay. Does council have any questions on this this project?
Well, I do, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
A couple of years ago, we had a meeting downstairs in the conference room, and they had some detailed drawings of what was going to be done at Richardson Lake entrance and what was going to be done both at Town Creek and the road following it. Have any of those plans been changed due to some of the public input to date?
I think that the intersection of Richardson Lake, first of all, is pretty much the same. We changed some of the dynamics to address the turn lanes coming in from the south of the project, but it's basically the same. We changed some of the median to make sure that we were able to get the turn lanes in and that they function correctly, because right now there's a median there that would cause the traffic to kind of wiggle as you go in, and so we straightened out some of that and made some accommodations there. But the traffic capacity is handled in exactly the same way.
Okay.
Going up through the corridor, I want to make sure I'm addressing the particular roads. Did you mention Hartwell Drive or Town Creek even?
Well, Hawthorne, I believe, when they had the original drawings, actually infringed on a an individual's lot line. I mean, I don't know if that's been modified or...
On Hartwell Drive?
Yeah.
Would that be? Yes, on Hartwell Drive... We actually redesigned
that.
Yes, we actually redesigned Hartwell Drive to minimize right-of-way impacts. And we spent a great effort there trying to redesign that and push the traffic to the interior and give back green space on the outside. And so that allowed us to tie the road in and make it function a little safer. The mayor and Richard could probably tell you that we've exhausted many man hours in conversations about improving that particular intersection.
Right.
But a good effort was placed toward doing that.
From your notes, my understanding is the people wanted to have the improvements about the existing center line, but in fact what you're saying, it's more feasible to move the whole road, you know, one lane or two to the left or south.
Well, actually, specifically to that intersection that we were speaking of at Hartwell Drive, we shifted it to be able to see what that would cause in the project. And when we shifted the project away, that was the second alternative that we showed at the meeting in May.
Right.
When we pushed it away, it actually increased the total right-of-way impacts. And you really can't tell that until you push the alignment over. So we actually had two separate designs for the project. And when we did that and showed it to the public, the comment actually came back that they favored the changes about the existing center line that we had progressed from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So the comments favor the original design and not the shift in alignment.
And there's still not going to be a traffic light at Town Creek and Silverblood?
At this point, we actually resolved that a little over a year ago. And when we addressed that intersection at Town Creek, we did get comments at each meeting. No, I can't quantify those. I'd have to go back and look. But people were asking about that light. And what we did was study the intersection and felt that with the improvements that we were going to make along the Silver Bluff Quarter, because we were going to have three lanes to go all the way through, and then we're also going to add a free flow right turn, that was going to help the operation of that intersection. Also, our agreement was that after the project was complete, we would monitor this, and if we felt it met the warrants at that time, it would still be able to get a light. But at this time, it does not meet the warrants.
Well, I think the original argument was the reason the traffic flow at the Town Creek didn't warrant, you know, a traffic light was because most of the people took the back road down to Pine Lawn to get back on the Silver Bluff. So until you get a light there, you're not really going to get a true reflection of what people would do to come out of Gem Lakes to go downtown.
Right. Well, we understood that, but in order to install the light, you have to install it off of the actual counts coming through the intersection.
I know what you're saying. It's a chicken or the egg. But people are avoiding the intersection because it's extremely difficult to make a left turn out of Town Creek. The visibility is restricted, and people are coming 35, 40 miles an hour, coming the opposite way.
Right. So, and this project will address some of those issues because we will be able to clear and increase that sight distance as you're coming into the intersection. And we do hope that the operational changes that we have suggested will ease the operations there at the intersection. But in the future, if it does not, we can still go back and see if it meets the warrants. And that was the agreement that we had moving forward, that we would make these improvements and see how they worked, and then go back and revisit that in the future, which we still have that option.
Okay. Thanks.
Kevin, explain a little bit. How many warrants are there they have to meet? Is it 7 or 9?
It's 9 criteria.
9 different criteria.
And you don't have to meet all 9. That's a misconception, but it's 1 or more. And so you have to be able to meet those and show it. And they deal with volume, traffic volume. They'll deal with accidents and safety. They'll deal with pedestrians crossing if there's a school in the proximity. So there are a lot of different areas that we have to review to be able to say that it meets those warrants.
Right.
And that keeps us from going and putting them up anywhere where we want to. So we have to meet those before we install them.
Right. Any other comments by council?
Yes, just to reconfirm, back in 2001 when the Village of Woodside was approved, there was supposed to be a light at the intersection there. My understanding, that light is going to go in at that intersection. Even the traffic is a little bit low, the requirements, but it's also a high level of safety issue there for the cars coming from Petticoat Junction. Is that still in the works, or did that drop off the sled somewhere?
My understanding is that we have that money paid by the
department. Yeah, we have the money in the pot.
Right.
We, the city.
For the installation of the light at Richardson?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. That is a point of contention, but I do remember that being mentioned to me even after I became the project manager. So, yes, that is there.
That's still in the works?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Is anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this issue? You may do so. Okay. Sure. Come on.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, my name is Brad Kerr. I live at 102 Hartwell Drive, right on the corner of Silver Bluff and Hartwell. I believe my house was probably the one you were referring to. I got an email on these results that we were talking about with the 56% saying that we're in favor of the state, and there were two designs presented in May 26 meeting. There was one design labeled state and one design labeled city vacant, if I remember correctly. If that's accurate. Okay. And so I got on the I was a little perplexed with the results, trying to figure out how that happened. So I got on the Aiken County E-Government Services website and started counting parcels that border Silver Bluff. And there are about 54 parcels that actually touch the Silver Bluff corridor on both sides. Some are residential, some are business. And so we have reports of 193 respondents. But my question, and I believe is along the lines of how many of those 54 that are directly impacted that have a dog in the fight, that really care, that they're going to lose property, fence line, trees, etc., what percentage of those 54 are reflected in this result? It looks like the state has just kind of given two big piles, yay and nay, and there's no further investigation into because we don't know. They distributed the comment cards via postal routes. So some of these comment cards may have been from people who live 2 or 3 miles away from Silver Bluff Road that are on the same postal route but got a meeting invitation to the meeting. So I'm thinking the results are skewed. Okay? And I believe a couple emails that I've seen, there have been a couple requests into South Carolina DOT for copies of the actual comments, and we've not heard anything back yet. So I was hoping that DOT could respond to those questions in terms of who are the people, where do they live, you know, put them on a map. You know, let's look into this a little further, because I'm not seeing it. Everyone that I talked to at the meeting on that day was in favor of the city design, because the city design shifts the center line from the Jim Lake side of Silver Bluff over to the empty lots. There's an empty lot right across the street from my house. There's a buffer zone, I believe, owned by a subsidiary of Woodside. It goes down the Woodside side of Silver Bluff Corridor. I don't know exactly how wide it is, 50, 75, 100 feet wide. More than enough to account for the 8 to 15 feet centerline shift to an empty lot to save houses and trees along the corridor. And that's been, I believe, my argument all along. So.
And again, Mr. Griffith, it was labeled City of Aiken, and Mr. Gann, I know, will speak to this, but really what was labeled the City of Aiken plan was really the alternative plan that did include the citizen input, and that's why we had the public information session. But Kevin, if you could speak to the notice.
What we do here is very difficult at times, because it's hard to quantify impact. That's why for this project at times it's been very contentious, because people in the community, everyone has a voice. We can't go along the corridor and count the number of properties that are just adjacent to that corridor. In fact, federal law requires us to advertise for a certain period of time before we can conduct these meetings. And generally, that is a 15-day period. So we have to give the public, not just the people inside the quarter, but anyone who would use this public road would have access and a voice to be able to come to the meeting and give a comment. On our first meeting, we only had 193 comments this time, but there were well over 200 comments in the first meeting. And it was overwhelming at that meeting that they did not want to see the widening. And because of that direction and the voice from the public, we went back and redid the purpose and need and started all over just about in our design process. So when we sent out the cards, we sent out over 6,000 cards. That's in addition to the federal requirement, because we wanted to get more of a voice from the community. So we gave an extraordinary effort from what we were required to do to get enough people out to get a good draw from the public. We sent out 6,000 cards. We advertised through the media. We even posted signs throughout the quarter. And that's for anyone who drives through that quarter to be able to come back to that meeting, have a voice, and give us their opinion. The DOT really doesn't have a pony in this show. All we do is go from the direction of the city through the Arts MPO to develop the project. You know, we conduct public information meetings, but all we do is summarize the comments. You know, I don't live in this quarter. I don't put in one form, but I count them and I read them and I bring this information back to you. You know, I'm here for you this evening to be able to tell you how we summarize it. But the bottom line is, anyone who comes to that meeting has a voice. You know, and we don't, you know, I'm not telling you that a tree is more important than a house, but FHWA considers environmental impacts just like they consider impacts to your yard specifically. You know, all those things are weighed ultimately in the process. So it's much more than, say, I'm not sure how many people you said, but if it's 50 or 60 people that are actually adjacent to the corridor that are directly affected. There are also indirect effects. You know, I would think that by passing through the corridor, that the city gains an impact if the traffic operations are better. You know, it makes it a more attractive community. More people come in and buy. The taxes go up. And it helps everyone. It helps the community. But there are more impacts than just one house or a strip of trees. FHWA doesn't look at it like that. And that's why we're mandated to follow the process. I hope that helps.
Kevin, did I understand you, too, from the remarks and from our discussions, that, of course, the next step is that environmental study that will study the impacts of the actual widening of the road. There'll be a formal hearing, and the public can attend that and certainly express those concerns that we're hearing tonight at that hearing,
yes,
which probably be after the first of the year.
That is correct. And I also wanted to mention, too, I have the summary of those comments that you requested earlier. I have those with me. But in how we present them to you, I had to go through our environmental office and also through our legal to make sure that I presented you that information in the right format. Generally, we would request you to do that in writing, mm-hmm, and give that back to you. But I have them for you this evening. So.
Okay, so we make those available through the city website. We'll make them available.
Right. I mean,
okay.
I can't release them with addresses and names because those people are protected. But I do have the summary for you.
Okay, great. That's great.
Okay. Kevin, speak to Brad's point a minute about what you're doing over there at Hartwell. What you plan on doing, what DOT plans on doing.
Okay.
Because there were some changes made over there,
right,
to alleviate, I think, some of the problem that would have been.
At Hartwell Drive, I think we spent more man hours on this one intersection than any other intersection on the project. And it was because of those right-of-way impacts and with the direction from the Arts Committee, when we were instructed to minimize the right-of-way impacts, they started around that intersection specifically. We normally do a balanced approach to where we develop the project about the center line to be fair to everyone along the corridor and not show favoritism. But at this particular intersection, what we did was, first of all, installed curb and gutter. We redesigned the intersection to push the traffic to the inside, and we gave back green space to those front yards. So where there was a median on the inside of that state road, Hartwell Drive, we reduced that median, and we gave a grassy area back to those residents. So we balanced that. In the end, that made the turning radii work out a little easier because we had certain requirements that we had to meet for the traffic to be able to turn out and be able to see around those curves. So we really did a lot of work just to redesign that. I'm not sure if you were in one of those meetings where we actually showed those designs through that iterative process, but we came back with a couple of different designs to try to minimize those impacts. And that was specific from the direction of the Arts Committee.
Okay. Would anyone else like to speak on the issue? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Thank you.
And for council consideration, Mayor, just to be clear, this is only a motion to authorize you to, mm-hmm, sign that letter of concurrence, mm-hmm, so the project can proceed with the environmental study with a formal public hearing then to be held once that study is completed.
Okay. All right. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. We have a second. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously to move forward on this. And as we said before, at probably the first part of the year, Kevin, sometime after the first of the year, hopefully you will come back for a public meeting.
Yes, what I'll do is redo a schedule,
yeah,
and then submit that schedule probably next month.
Excellent.
Okay.
At the committee meeting, and we'll have it on record.
Excellent.
And then we'll go from there with the dates.
Very good.
And we'll certainly push that out through, yeah, the website and our other outlets, Mayor.
Kevin, we thank you for your effort, you and your team. It's been a long haul, and I think we're really getting somewhere now. Okay. Item 2, University of South Carolina at Aiken, 50th anniversary celebration. And they want to talk to us about banners. have anything to add.
I do, Mayor. Thank you.
Okay.
As Chancellor Hallman and Deidre Martin are making their way up to the podium, I was contacted by Deidre about the September 2011 celebration of the founding of USC Aiken on September 10, 1961. And in your council packet, you do have a proposed banner as well as a map for a proposed location of these banners, the months of August, September, and October. Chancellor, how are you?
I'm Tom Hallman. I work at USC Aiken, Mr. Mayor, members of council, Mr. City Manager. We appreciate the opportunity to present to you tonight. I told Councilwoman Clyburn that I'm just window dressing tonight because Dr. Martin has done all the legwork on this and understands exactly the request better than me, but I didn't want her to come and not be present when she makes this request of you. We appreciate your support over the years of USC Aiken. We would not be the institution we are today without the support of the broader community at every juncture when we've had the opportunity to grow or to move in a new direction. The celebration of the 50th anniversary is a hallmark event, and we want the community to be a part of it as well. I'll turn it over to Dr. Martin.
By the way, we're glad you work at the university.
He works hard most days, I can tell you that. Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to you tonight. USC Aiken is very proud that our heritage lies very much in the city of Aiken. We opened our doors on September 10th, 1961 in Banksia. So our history is very much tied to the history of downtown Aiken. And as Dr. Hallman said, we are what we are today because of the people of this community. One of the things I'm most proud of about our history is it was community leaders back in late 50s and the early 60s that stood together and went to the state and said, we want higher education in our community. And because of those community leaders, we exist today. And so we've tried very hard throughout our history to never forget those beginnings and that we're very much linked into this community and would not be here without this community. So we hope to have a great celebration of the 50th anniversary of USC Aiken starting this fall. We plan to have an event on Saturday, September 10th, the day we actually opened our doors 50 years ago, at Banksia, with a picnic on the grounds, with the mayor there hopefully to read a citation and various other things going on, bringing back a lot of our alumni and friends throughout the years. It'll be a big day for Aiken and for USC Aiken because that's the same day as Aiken's Making. So we hope our crowd will come to our event at Banksia, then come enjoy Aiken's Making, and then come to a concert at the Etheridge Center that night. So that's a big kickoff for us on that Saturday. We're coming tonight to request your permission to have some banners in downtown Aiken as part of our celebration. On the screen and in your packet, you can see a banner design. Our theme is 50 years, still setting the pace based on our Pacer logo. Also in your packet, and Stuart, if you'd scroll back up, you'll see some proposed locations. This is nothing terribly scientific other than Mr. Pierce telling me to drive around downtown and see where there were open spots. Go up a little bit higher. And you'll just see there's about 10 locations. We would bear the cost, certainly, of producing the banners. We would just need the city's help with hanging them and your permission, if you would so grant it, to allow us to do this. We'd like for the banners to be up from August to October, realizing there might be some holiday-type banners that ADDA might want to do as we get closer to the holiday season. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Well, we're very, very proud. Let me say this. I'm very proud to be a part of USC Aiken and have the university here. And y'all have done a wonderful job over the years at the university in all areas, the studies, the athletics, everything. And so it's wonderful to live in a city that has a wonderful university like Aiken. University, like South Carolina Aiken University. I, for one, have no problem with this at all. I think it's at least we can do is to help out in a partnership with the university. And I'd like to hear other comments. Are these places that you really would like to have them?
They're open now. I looked where the character banners were and looked at where open spots were. And since everybody's in a budget crisis, and we always are at the university, I think I can afford to do about 10 of these to do them really nicely that'll look good. So I chose 10 locations based on our budget.
Right.
But I'm certainly willing to sit down with Richard or whoever from the city and make sure these are ideal for the city as well.
Deidre, will there be anything near the campus besides your marquee? I'm sure your marquee will start displaying this, but anything else beyond?
We will have these similar banners to these also on the campus throughout the whole school year. So this will be this is our logo, and this will be a consistent design we use throughout.
Okay.
We're trying to pull in our downtown history.
Mm-hmm.
We're working with ADDA to get the downtown merchants involved so that when we have big crowds in town that we're encouraging them to utilize downtown too. So.
And Mr. Mayor, I support whatever arrangements the university makes with the staff in terms of the exact locations, but I'd be more than pleased to move approval of their request.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, working through Richard and staff.
I second that request.
I actually attended the university in your first master's degree program with Dr. Vite,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably way before your time, but this certainly does bring back a lot of pleasant memory talking about the USCA and the location at Banksy. And I certainly hope that all of our council members would vote to support this.
Very good. Did you make the motion?
I made the motion, and I thank Councilwoman Bryce second.
Yeah, heard that. Any other comments? Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Under old business, a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to advance capital sales tax funds by a reserve fund loan for the SPCA jointly owned shelter construction. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of this ordinance is an ordinance authorizing borrowing from the City of Aiken's General Fund Reserve accounts as outlined in the ordinance for the purpose of funding the city-owned animal control space to be constructed at the proposed SPCA building. Council did pass this unanimously at the June 27th meeting. We are committed to a total amount of $1 million towards this project. It's going to be a jointly owned facility. We're going to have dirt. We're going to have space for our animal control operation. And for council consideration tonight is the final reading and adoption of the ordinance.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
I just have one question that I didn't ask the other night. I obviously am in favor of this program, but when we take money out of our reserve fund for purposes like this, how do we account for the loss of interest?
That we do collect interest.
You collect the interest?
We do. Yep.
From who?
Ourselves.
Yeah, we pay ourselves interest.
I know, but we're taking the $1 million out of the capital sales project.
We pay that back with interest. So.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
And again, this is going to be a city-owned portion of the facilities.
Yeah, okay. Well, I move approval of second reading.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Show of hands.
Question.
Do you have a question? Okay, I'm sorry, Reggie. Go
just
ahead.
A clarification.
Right.
The money that comes in above local option sales tax 1, 2, and 3 automatically goes into an interest-bearing account, and there's been interest on that amount a number of tens of thousands of dollars since 2002 or three. So there is interest gained on that when the money's not in use.
Mm-hmm. And that is correct.
So there is money being gained on it.
Okay.
Right. Excuse me for interrupting.
Very good. No, excuse me for jumping ahead.
That's a good point.
I didn't know whether you counted the votes before he made his...
Show of hands then, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
Okay. Item two is have your Monday nights back.
Item number two, second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding the location of manure containers. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The ordinance has a very basic title. It just says an ordinance amending paragraph 3.3.21.C.4 of the zoning ordinance. As council will see from the ordinance in front of you, it's just deleting the 25-foot property line minimum setback for these containers in residential zoning districts. A question came up at the first reading on this, and again, this applies only in the residential districts. Even though covered containers are not required in RSH and RSS, they still were subject to the 25-foot minimum setback. The proposed ordinance that passed unanimously on first reading would delete the 25-foot minimum setback. HD is a commercial zone, and as Equine Committee studied this and the Planning Commission reviewed it, there was no need seen for any change to that ordinance since that applied to commercial operations. So for council consideration on second reading is approval of the ordinance to remove the 25-foot property line setback for these containers from the zoning ordinance.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing also. If it's anyone like to speak on this ordinance, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move approval of this ordinance on second reading.
Okay, I'll second it. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passage unanimously. Item 3 is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding allowed uses in the plan and institutional zone. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you very much, Mayor. This proposed ordinance is entitled an ordinance amending the non-residential district use table at paragraph 3.1.6 of the zoning ordinance regarding allowable uses in the planned institutional zone. This proposed amendment arose out of two different occurrences. One was the announcement of the county council that they were going to be locating the new county complex on the bypass, and your joint meeting with the Planning Commission to have them review the use table for planned institutional uses. And that's contained in page 58 of your materials tonight. And you'll see there's two arrows towards the bottom of the use table. City public projects and all other public projects which were listed under government facilities were not allowed in the planned institutional zone. So with the announcement by the county, a review by planning staff revealed that those two uses were not allowed. The diamond means that the use will be allowed if it's approved by a concept plan that's been approved by City Council, so that would allow the use only if Council will allow it. This passed unanimously on first reading, and this is for second reading and adoption of the proposed amendment.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is second reading and public hearing. If anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve this ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding allowed uses in planned institutional zones.
Okay, we have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Under new business, item one is a resolution to approve purchase of 1078 Croft Avenue, that property. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. The resolution has the title of a resolution authorizing the purchase of property in the Carlson Park neighborhood in the city of Aiken. The proposed contract that's in your packet tonight is signed by the representative of the owner, Eunice Stevens, under a power of attorney, and it is subject to City Council approval. It's to purchase 1078 Croft Avenue for $50,000. We have grant money under the Safe Routes to Schools program, so we're not using general fund money to purchase this property. We've already purchased property on Aldrich Street, and Council will recall when the initial discussions about the Crosland Park project were done 2 years ago. One of the major components, in addition to renovating the homes in the neighborhood, was the construction of sidewalks. We became aware of the Safe Routes to Schools program that puts sidewalk to schools and school grounds. A study of the subdivision showed that access from Aldrich Street and Croft Avenue to the Aiken Middle School and North Aiken Elementary campus would be very helpful. We have a number of school children riding buses, and they literally go several miles around the loop to go to school when their neighborhood abuts the school property. Another potential amenity would be a walking track for the residents of the neighborhood, and these two properties will provide access from two different halves of the neighborhood to the property. So for council consideration is the authority to enter in this contract to purchase this property for $50,000.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, discussion?
Yes, I have several questions.
Okay.
The Safe Route to Schools grant program, how much, where does the money come from and how much is it?
Let's see, Larry Morris is here. Mr. Dwyer, he's got details. My understanding is it's approximately $400,000. It's through the federal government. You've seen several areas in the city where other schools have had sidewalks immediately adjacent to them, and this is a part and parcel of that project. But in addition to the sidewalks, there'll actually be some street lighting that's involved. So it's all, you know, grant funded.
And to the provisions, what are we going to do with this house?
Mr. Morris can speak to that because he actually inspected the property and recommended the purchase of this particular parcel.
And while he's coming up, on my brand new iPad that I learned to operate, I took a satellite view of that area, and it appears as though further down on Croft Avenue, there is some type of walkway that looks like going right through the woods to get to the school.
It may be a path. I do know that some folks are just making kind of a pathway to the school. There's not a sidewalk there.
Yeah, no, it's not. It clearly is. It's been developed over the years. I'm sorry, Larry. Go ahead.
The selection of this home was done in conjunction with the school authorities, where the pathway that you're referring to, Mr. Dwyer, comes in. Of course, the kids have walked through there over the years, but it comes into an area that is just not conducive to safety, as the school authorities would like it. Where this pathway will come in actually will connect with where they offload their buses each morning. So they have teachers available there, they have good lighting available there, and that's one reason for us to work with this house right there.
Have we had any safety problems with the connections being used now?
Yes, if you go look at one of the paths that the kids had made through that same area, one of the property owners there, the house is now vacant, I do not know who the property owner was, but actually put up barbed wire behind his home, and there was also broken glass put behind the home on the pathway. Very dangerous situation.
Is the property between the back, the rear of all the homes on Croft and the campus of the schools, is that all private property?
No, sir. That is owned by the school board. Again, we did meet with them to verify that. So the school board property does come up to the rear of this property.
And are we allowed to use this money to buy a building?
I would have to look on under the actual rules of it and see exactly what our budget is. As long as we follow the rules that are laid down under the Safe Routes to School program were okay.
Well, I mean, it seems kind of strange. If you said you're going to put a sidewalk in, I wouldn't have any problem. But what are we going to do with the house when we buy it?
The house that I looked at, we have enough room between it and the house on the right-hand side as you're facing it to move the AC unit that's right there. It's a very huge, old unit. And we could actually rehab this house and turn it into one of our Crossland Park neighborhood homes and still have enough room for the pathway, probably about a six-foot-wide pathway for the children in that area. Would not harm the home at all. We take that from that one end of the home. Once we get to the rear of the home, then the school board has authorized us to put the pathway on their property, and it'll be a zigzag pathway down the hill. There is quite a hill behind the home.
So why would we use the school Safe Route to School money? Why don't we just use our regular Crossland Park money to buy the house, if the plan is to rehab the house and put it along with the others that we're working on?
I mean, that's certainly an option we can consider, Mr. Noir, if that's the preference of council. Again, we were trying to maximize our dollars in Crossland Park. So if we've got grant money to buy the property, that may be an additional house we could buy with the 112 money out of the general fund.
Well, I mean, if the grant provides it, we can buy a house to do that. And I assume the $50,000 is just a flat amount that that's what we're going to buy every house in Crossland Park for?
No, that's just the negotiated amount for this house. I mean, it just happens that we do have a prior house we bought with raw sewage in it for that price, but the seller was willing to sell this vacant property for that. And in fact, I did get a call today from John Wade, and he apologized that he could not be at the meeting tonight, but he's very much in favor of the city purchasing this property.
Oh, I mean, it seems like it's an excellent purpose. And while we're in Crossland Park, let me just kind of divert, because I would like to ask one question. The handout that you gave us on all of the status of the homes, are we getting ahead of ourselves a little bit in Crossland Park? Because we now have 13 vacant. We're working on 5. We have completed but not sold 6. And we have 7 that we have rented. Mm-hmm. And I assume those are under the auspices that these are people that are working to improve their credit, and
that's,
as soon as they do, they'll buy.
The we've sold 2 houses. Crossland Park has sold, Aiken Corporation has sold 1 house, so you've actually sold 3. We are in the process of pursuing a more aggressive marketing plan. We've talked with the Board of Realtors. There's considerable interest there. We're using the MLS service. We also had the assistant city manager went with folks from the Aiken Housing Authority this afternoon when we were attending the Center for Excellence. Ivory Matthews mentioned that the clients that participate in the Section 8 housing are typically a 4 to 4.5 year stay. So over that course of time, they're repairing their credit and otherwise, you know, bettering themselves. That's the whole idea with the Center for Excellence: learn job skills, learn what it means to have a budget, and so forth. And in a follow-up conversation with Ivory, it's apparent that there's a potential source of folks who would be eligible for Crossland Park home ownership. So we think it's a good idea, while we've got the best value not only for labor but for materials, to get an inventory of houses which we can market.
Yeah, my only concern is we're up to 20 empty houses in there. And I mean, our idea was to go in and rehab them and sell them and so forth. I'm sorry for the diversion, but it just gave me a chance to ask about that.
Let me just add to what Richard said. Don and I attended an event at the Housing Authority about a month or so ago, and two at the center. Ivory stated that in February, I believe, she took applications and received within one day over 2,600 applications for folks wanting housing in this area. The challenge for her, as Richard said, the 4 year is an average time that folks reside in the housing. The challenge for her has been to catch up with these folks, because in between that time, they're moving from so many places. They're living with cousins and relatives and friends, and they may have 9 different addresses by the time she's ready to say, you can move into this unit. So she's developed a remedy for that. But certainly there's a need. But a particular note is when I look at Tools Hill, the situation here is not so unusual than it was with Tool Hill with our vacancy there. And yet once things started moving, we started seeing a higher occupancy level. So, but certainly there's a need.
But we never had 19 vacant homes in Tool Hill, did we?
We no, had not. Several properties.
We had 40. Yeah. We had over 40 at one time.
Yeah, sure did.
Started working on them. Are we having?
Well, yeah.
So
okay.
They were all sold or.
I just think we need to be careful about not having too many vacant homes and getting ahead of ourselves. That's my only point because yeah.
and
19 vacant homes is a lot.
And certainly that is a consideration that we're going to keep in mind, but I have to say there was considerable interest when I spoke to the Board of Realtors last month. So, I mean, we see some very good partnerships, and having an inventory is something we...
Will that add to our costs as well, because we'll have to pay the realtors for...
Well, it's certainly something we have to budget for, because we would split commissions with real estate agents that would sell. But we do have some houses that we bought very reasonably, and we think the budget will allow for that.
Okay. Thank you very much for including this update, because it's a very, very important program in the city, and I like the opportunity of being able to keep up the speed on it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
And I'm sorry to do
that. We ought to get that once a month.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we do
absolutely.
That. It is good. Richard's good. Any other comments? We've got a motion in a second. No more comments. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 2 is a review of a proposed development plan for Monterey Drive. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you so much. This is kind of an unusual situation because you don't have a resolution or ordinance for me to read tonight. What we do have is a traffic management ordinance, and we've got an owner of land who wants to develop it and build a hotel on it, and representatives are here from the group to discuss the project. And Ed Evans and I sat down and discussed our situation because it's really a situation of first impression. We've had this traffic management ordinance for a number of years, but this is the first time this situation came up. Whiskey Road, if this development does not happen at all, based on the traffic study that we have, and it's been reviewed by our contract traffic engineer, Roger Dyer, and bears out the same thing. If you do not develop this property at all, the Whiskey Road traffic, based on the traffic management study, will deteriorate. I just want to make a note here, though, that when we do traffic studies, we only talk about numbers of cars. We don't talk about the flow rate of the cars. And that was something that Mr. Evans and I discussed in my office. We've got this technology of the Fusion traffic management system that's on Whiskey Road, so the traffic does flow. But if you strictly count the numbers, no development at all in the materials you have, you'll see a deterioration from D to E to F. Based on the traffic management ordinance, if there will be a degradation in the traffic rating for that section of road that's in the traffic management study, it is mandated that this matter come to City Council for consideration. Mr. Smith is here tonight. He's got some legal insight into this particular situation because, again, it's not a situation where you say that the development cannot take place at all. City Council's scope of review is just to look and see if the site plan needs to be altered or reduced. It may be altered to reduce the impact of traffic to be generated by the proposed project. However, I again cite you to the fact that on page 70 of your materials, this proposed project is only having a small to minimal impact on traffic on Whiskey Road. We do have a course on our drawing board connecting the East Gate extension across onto Oak Grove, up to Centennial Drive, and eventually to Powder House Road. What effect that would have on this project is not considered in the calculations you have, But if you look at the particular table on page 82, as well as the conclusions on page 84 of the traffic study submitted by the developer, it does say no traffic from the motel is added to the Walmart exit 2 to the extended stay suites proposed project. There's no, the study area does not create a loss in service levels. And then if you look on page 87 and 88, you'll see that Roger Dyer, who is our contract engineer, says that the report should be approved as a reasonable review. And he says in there that even with the change in the traffic levels, this is not the result of traffic coming to or from the proposed extended stay facility. So I just highlight those particular aspects of the two reports so council can consider them in full. And Gary, if you could provide us some additional insight, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce. The traffic management ordinance requires that this matter come before City Council for your review and your determination as to what should happen. The traffic management ordinance doesn't necessarily give you the best guidance as to what your determination should be with respect to what you do with the information that's provided to you by the traffic management ordinance. The concerning thing to me is legal counsel, and Richard's kind of touched on this, if regardless of whether or not this motel is built, the level of service on Whiskey Road and the areas that the traffic management study or the traffic study take into consideration is going to be the same. If the hotel is built, the level of service is going to be the same as it would be if the hotel is not built. To me, the obvious thing to do would be to consider reducing the number of hotel rooms, but that's not going to have any impact on the level of service. And so it's concerning that you're presented with this situation where your traffic management ordinance wants you to keep a level of service D or better on all of your roadways in the city. You've got a project in the city. This hotel is clearly allowed by right under the zoning ordinance in the location where they want to put it, and the traffic service level is going to go to E in 3 years, and nothing could happen regardless of what happens there. And so it's you know, based on what the traffic engineer has told us, based on what their traffic study has said, it's not a function of the hotel causing this problem going to a level of service E. It's going to happen anyway because of already the existing developments on Whiskey Road. So I throw that out for you for what it's worth, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have about the process.
Well, again, it's a frustration that I've had since I've been on council. I'll probably have it till I get off of council. Each individual project on its own can stand on its own, but the fact of the matter is the traffic on Whiskey is getting bigger and bigger, and it's one of the worst roads in the city. We have no plan of what we're going to do to resolve that issue, except that if we keep putting up more projects, and some we have no control over, and I'm hearing what you're saying is we cannot turn down this motel. This hotel is going to get built. We might shave the number of rooms. We could shave the number of rooms if we wanted to. But it seems to me, folks, at some point we need to come up with a game plan for doing something with Whiskey. And I know that if we build the Pothouse Connector Road, I think that's gonna do a wonderful thing. I'd love to see Roger tell us what that's gonna do. When we look at the chart here on page 120, we go from 2014 to 2024. I mean, that's an awfully long time. Can you imagine how many structures will be built on Whiskey between now and 2024? So. I'm frustrated because we always have a traffic plan that says that there are additional vehicles flowing onto Whiskey, and this is going to get approved whether I vote for it or not. But I sure would like to love for us to focus on doing something about Whiskey, or we're going to have Washington Ave East.
Well, Mr. Mayor, if I could please.
Go ahead.
I understand what Councilman Dorr is speaking of there with traffic situations at certain times of the day there on Whiskey Road. One thing, Councilman Dorr, is there's not a tremendous amount of property left to be developed on Whiskey Road, short of getting rid of something to put something else in its place. But the city of Aiken has been proactive, and through unfortunate circumstances, the Pawnee Connector Road has not been opened at this time, which really should have been opened by now. But we're moving forward to get that connector road open, and that's going to alleviate some of the traffic that we're faced with even today on Whiskey Road. Now, also, as you've just mentioned, the Powderhouse Connector Road is in our plans, but I think more quickly than that, we will see, as we've already making plans there at the Cracker Barrel entrance to go directly across from Eastgate Drive and then turn and make a connector road that will come into Centennial Parkway, which will give us another alternative route to Whiskey Road to get from Pine Log all the way back up to the Aiken Mall from that standpoint. So I think there are things in place to alleviate this traffic on Whiskey Road. We are going forward as quickly as we can to get these in place. These traffic studies that we see that are coming in are not taking any of this into consideration. So, you know, potentially with the connectivity that we are making here, we could actually see in 2014 the traffic count on Whiskey Road go down. We all know that with the traffic signals which have been installed and the synchronization of them, we have seen the flow on traffic on Whiskey Road improve tremendously. I think only since that time have I ever left the south side of Aiken and made it downtown without ever having to stop at one traffic signal. So all of these are improvements that we've got in place. So I just say that to say that we're not just sitting here not doing anything. We are doing things.
Well, I agree on paper we have some things, but that Powderhouse Connector Road is not going to get developed till we have a sense of what's going to happen with all those acres between it and Banks Mill, or Powderhouse, I'm sorry. Did the traffic synchronization system we put in, did that increase capacity of Whiskey Road at all? Does anybody know?
It increased the flow. The way you do the traffic management studies, you don't talk about flow rate. You talk about number of cars. So, again, yeah. it may be appropriate at some juncture to consider actually adding flow rate in as a consideration. I mean, it may give you a truer picture of what a road is capable of handling.
But what we're asked to do tonight, if we approve this, is we're asked to override our traffic management ordinance, as I understand.
Really, the reason that it's before you now is because the ordinance has some very specific language that if the level of service on a road near the project is going to degrade to worse than a D, that Ed Evans cannot approve the development.
Yeah.
It has to come to City Council. And, you know, just thinking, you would think that perhaps there's a way you could, you know, if it was clear that the hotel was going to be the cause of the change to E, then you would have something to say.
Oh,
about
yeah,
that.
But you can never prove that.
But you don't have that opportunity.
No, you could never prove that.
Right.
Well, because nobody can tell me for sure when the people are going to leave the hotel parking lot, right, and when they're going to come back. So,
well, my feeling on this is there's no reason that development on Monterey should bear the brunt of, you know, I mean, if we reject the and say we want to abide by our level D or C traffic management plan, all of a sudden we're just penalizing this development.
Yeah.
If it's not Monterey development, next week it's going to be somebody else and somebody else. The problem is we need to solve the traffic on Whiskey and do something about it. And like you say, we're doing some things, but why should we penalize a developer for something that the city should be doing?
Well, it's not penalizing the developer.
It's not penalizing it, but I mean, basically, if you're restricting their options, you are penalizing.
Well, your alternative is to do nothing and approve it, as we've always done and as we'll do tonight. And someday, when Whiskey gets so congested, I hope you'll all be up front and say, hey, I had a part in that.
I'll be in
because
your corner.
But if we do nothing, it's only going to get worse as more and more projects get built on Whiskey, and it's going to be Washington Ave. Sorry for my frustration.
I wish I could say that I share the passion of the traffic concerns that some do. And having worked at Savannah Riverside and in the days, Mr. Mayor, you remember these days, and so does Richard, with 25,000 employees and the traffic that took place there. And I don't know if I remember any real alarms going off. We welcomed the jobs that came with that and the way Aiken managed to develop and flourish. So I manage, as I said before, and I keep saying, I manage to go north-south with impatience, because everybody won't get out of my way so that I can get to my meeting, because I'm late in leaving to get to my meeting. So we lack patience in terms of getting to our destination. But frankly, I cannot see a traffic problem personally that causes alarm in our city.
I think to say that we have not been doing anything is not exactly the case here, because since I've been here, we've really been trying. And I think the more you, each time you open up a little easement to let traffic go a different route, then something builds on that area. So it's just no way you can fix this, because if you build it, they will come. And I think it's good for the economy, but I think you do have to be a little bit more patient when you travel Whiskey Road. I would hope that it would go away, but I don't think it's going to go away, not in my lifetime. Unless we do what somebody suggested years ago and just build one of those things overhead.
Those bridges that I mentioned.
Bypass bridges, so those who want to go from Aiken to New Ellington can go straight there and not have to stop on Whiskey Road. But other than that, I think we have allowed the developments, and I think to deny this one at this point would not be the right thing to do for them, because it clearly says that this will not contribute to the level of service, because it's going to get there anyway. So maybe we'll go from D to E to F to G to H at some point in our life, but I hope not.
The other point, Mr. Mayor, if you'll allow me to say, given the job losses that our community is having, I'm supporting whatever it takes to keep people employed. I don't want them on that unemployment line. And the question may be asked, is that the sacrifice of traffic? Perhaps so. But people are hungry, they need jobs, and they need to work.
I agree with Ms. Price, and just recently I had the pleasure of being up in New Jersey driving on a turnpike, and for those that haven't been up there lately, they're expanding it to 12 lanes all the way from New York to the turnoff for the Pennsy Turnpike, and it's already scheduled to be overloaded. So I don't think you can ever really get ahead. I don't think you'll ever have surplus transportation anywhere. We can just do the best we can to keep traffic moving. And I agree with Ms. Price.
We're certainly not as bad as it is in the Northeast. It's just frustrating, because we have a traffic management ordinance for a purpose. It's supposed to guide us in the approval of projects. It's supposed to try to install a measure of control over traffic. That's the whole purpose of having it. And it's not a perfect solution. These traffic management studies are not a perfect solution, because you just can't predict. You can go to a table in the traffic book and come up with the number of vehicles or trips per day, But it's misleading because it can't guarantee that somebody's not going to go to the motel at 11 o'clock when, you know, they're not supposed to, and we worry about peak travel day. So it's just a frustration that I've had as long as I've been involved in traffic. And
well, I don't think it's going to be any worse than, you know, the impact on the traffic than what the what's that restaurant that's going to go in?
Cracker Barrel.
Cracker Barrel.
The Cracker Barrel would have on the street. We didn't see, I know you voiced some concerns about the traffic that the Cracker Barrel would impact, but I didn't notice our council, you know, saying it's going to impact our traffic management plan.
Of course.
Which I think it would. Was that an issue?
It was, sure. It was turning onto a D&E. The traffic study, yeah, it was.
I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, that's what's going to happen on Whiskey Road regardless, whether you build or
that's
not.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, we didn't talk about going from a D to an E because of the Cracker Barrel, and I don't see why we should.
Well, I did. I voted for the Cracker Barrel, but I did.
I know.
Yeah. I have a question, Mr. Mayor, to ask Neil if he don't mind coming to the podium here.
Oh, okay.
I have two questions, Neil, if you don't mind.
Yes.
One is...
This is Neil Shaw.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, name
sorry, Neil Shaw.
And you are...
With NMR Hospitality Group at 141 Commonwealth Way in South Carolina.
Two questions. Neil, if this is approved this evening, when would you expect this to open, one? And secondly, how many people would you employ at this location?
We're anticipating to try and obtain financing, and we're doing all trying to gather all the drawings and construction documents once you guys hopefully approve us. And if everything goes well in the beginning of 2012, depending on financing needs, obviously that's going to be the hurdle that we want to work through as fast as we can, that we'd be open sometime before the spring of 2013 if we can.
And the number of people you anticipate hiring?
We would easily employ between 20 and 30 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another
Will this be an adjunct to the sleep-in motel or a different structure?
It'll be located next to the sleep-in, but the product is a extended stay TownPlace Suites by Marriott that we're considering.
Neil, what does the extended stay really mean? I mean, in detail.
Yeah, actually, I mean, in regards to the question you asked about, I mean, there are less trips per day because people are not going out to eat a lot of times. They're staying in their rooms and they're using the kitchenettes and extended stay efficiencies. And government travel is huge in Aiken, and we think that the ability to attract people to the length of stay is huge. It's not a transient traveler that you're attracting. You're attracting an extended stay traveler. And so that person travels very differently.
Mm-hmm. So they can stay there a number of days?
Yeah, minimum length of stay on average in extended stays, 5 nights at least.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, I support this mainly because it does not change to an F. It will affect it slightly, but the D, it won't change.
Oh, Mr.
But you know what, people, the reason we've got traffic on Whiskey Road, and it doesn't bother me, I guess maybe I'm the only person that it never bothers. I take my time. I admittedly, I leave early sometimes when I think it's going to be most crowded. But I'm glad to see the traffic because it means people are buying something. They're not just going, you know, to Ellington, New Ellington, and then back to some other place. And I like to see that. That helps our taxes be low.
Mm-hmm.
It helps a lot of things. It helps our merchants. And as Leslie said, it makes jobs. So I'm happy to see traffic. Now, obviously, you can have too much at some point, perhaps. But we do have these projects that have already been mentioned. We've got to get to work and make sure they go on a good pace so that we can get them in as soon as we can, with one going to Powder House Road and one going up to Centennial. And once we do get those, I think it will help. True, we don't know what will happen in between. Dick, there'll be some kind of development, certainly. but at least we'll have roads going to the east, where hopefully that'll take traffic off of Whiskey Road going to the north, that then goes down and turns to the right and goes that way. So I don't have a major problem in this at all. If it were a lot more, a lot bigger, then I would probably be different. But the fact that it doesn't appear that it's going to put that many cars on the road or change too much, it's fine. I think the traffic signals have been mentioned, and they seem to be working. They're working over in Evans and working well over there. And Richard, you visited over there before we even got ours in over here. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully that will at least keep the traffic moving on some frequency where it's most the biggest buildup, if you will. And so that's my view on this issue.
Let me make one final comment. My concern is with traffic. I applaud the project. It's a good project for the city. It's a good project in creating revenue for the city and creating jobs for the city. And I have voted against some of these projects in the past. I voted for the Cracker Barrel after expressing concern about traffic. I'll probably do the same thing tonight, but I just wish that we would make more of an effort to do something. I can't think of what, because I'm not a traffic expert, mm-hmm. but we seem to have the traffic experts come in and tell us it's okay to add another project to Whiskey, but I wish we could just get a long-range plan to do something, because once it gets really bad, it's going to be too late. So,
would anyone else in the audience like to speak? Reggie, I'm sorry. I know you want to. Go ahead, Reggie.
Yes. I think there's some simple things we could do that we're not doing. And I'll go back to the Cracker Barrel where Oak Lane turns off of Whiskey, or we will turn it off. One of the things we're not using is installing a drop-off lane, or whatever the proper term from the highway department would be. So if you're coming from New Ellington towards where the new Cracker Barrel will be, you have to wait for the light to change to make a right. And I hassled with the previous city manager about this. Why don't we put in a 4 or 6 car stack up?
That's deceleration lane.
Yeah, on Whiskey. Mm-hmm. Well, I had to push and scream and shove just to get the extra lane put in now on Oak Lane to relieve the right-hand turn immediately. But if you put one down at Corporate Parkway, you would speed the number of cars up that could go with either a 4 or 6 back up. And I think that's something we need to seriously look at. And I'll go back to Silver Bluff and Daugherty Road. We had a land issue turning from making a right onto Daugherty from Silver Bluff. It took an extra 2 years. And when we put the one at the Baptist Church side, if you will, that part of the traffic went away, but it took 2 years to get the other one. And now it never backs up, even in the rush hour. It doesn't back up past Lifesaver anymore. So I call that a simple thing. It's money, don't get me wrong. Right. The other one I'll go, and I understand that would fit, is at the bowling alley there by Walgreens, Daugherty Road and Whiskey. A right-hand turn lane there's numerous opportunities during busy time for a right-hand turn to keep moving there, but you can't move because of the straight traffic. I think we need to look at those. I don't think I know we do, and that'll speed up the number of cars that'll go through those intersections without a doubt. You can get as much as 5 to 10% extra flow out of that.
And so that certainly is something we can take a look at.
And those are things that a traffic engineer on the staff would be able to aggressively pursue.
As well as our contract.
I have to disagree with you. I don't think that's a traffic engineer issue. I think it's a philosophy issue. And my philosophy is on one side. And so I'll bring it back up again as we look at these. Maybe Corporate Parkway needs a 4 to 6 lane right-hand turning lane off of Whiskey.
Now you said 4 to 6 lane. You mean 4 or 6?
I mean 4 to 6 car backup there. And because during school time especially, that's a major right-hand turn, and we back up because you can't get there. Enough said. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Okay. Anybody else want to speak? We need,
I'll ask Ed to correct me if I get this wrong. I think what he's probably looking for what I'm hearing from council's discussion is a motion that would allow the development of the proposed project by NMR Hospitality as it has been presented to the planning department. that suits you, Ed?
Yeah. And I had, in my memo, I had put sleep-in hotel, but it's actually a four-story extended stay hotel.
Right.
So that would be the appropriate way to phrase it.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second to that effect, then?
I'll make the motion to approve, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. New business number three, first reading of an ordinance to consolidate various Aiken Corporation debts into a single loan. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance consolidating various Aiken Corporation loans with the City of Aiken. The Aiken Corporation has conducted a review of its outstanding debt to the City of Aiken. There were three debts that were identified as appropriate to consolidate just into one note based on the terms of the individual notes to kind of help with accounting purposes and streamline the reporting of the balances. One is the Blue House loan that was from the sale of the house that used to belong to Joe Babb, blue in color, that's on Chesterfield Street. There is a Willow Run painting bill that was doable upon the sale of the Willow Run spec building. And then the Tool Hill and Northside revitalization loan. Those three loans together total $328,800. Since the original loans were approved by way of ordinance, we have an ordinance for consolidating the loans under the terms set forth in the promissory note, which is attached as an exhibit to the ordinance. So this is merely first reading. If it's approved, we would put it on the agenda for the August 8th meeting for second reading and adoption, but for consideration tonight is just first reading of the ordinance to consolidate these three Aiken Corporation loans.
Okay, let me ask a question. Why are we doing this?
It's merely an accounting mechanism, Mayor. We did take this to the Executive Committee of Aiken Corporation. For a number of years, the finances for Aiken Corporation were reported on an accrual basis. A subcommittee worked on the finances in an effort to simplify the reporting of the accounts for Aiken Corporation. A cash basis was seen as a more streamlined method for that, with either quarterly or we thought a quarterly basis to, or at least a half-year basis, provide an accrual report. That's usually done for auditing purposes. So this is just an easier way to trace cash in and cash out for Aiken Corporation.
Like having them combined.
Having them combined. And that
but
was,
you could do it separately.
Well, we have been for years, absolutely. And right. Again, the Executive Committee unanimously approved consolidating the loans and going to the cash basis reporting.
Okay, I guess I still don't understand.
Okay.
It was approved before, now it's cash basis.
Let me,
but so there is a change in the method in that.
It's a change in the method.
Which is good.
It's plainly stated now.
If I can help you, I'm the culprit that got this going.
Well, I wasn't going to throw you under the bus, Mr.
That's all right. I don't mind saying so, and Mr. Brody is here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As we started looking at the accrual basis for managing the money, it's very difficult to do because there's something called retained earnings. If it doesn't add up, you just put a number in, and it's okay. So as we went into looking at the cash flow, and other issues are going to come up when the URS lease comes up in a couple of months. But as you go back, there's actually four ordinances that are affected here from 2003 forward. And there's a key word in the first paragraph there. If you look on page 91, the last sentence of that says to renovate homes on the north side of the city. Everything else has been a specific word. And so the north side of the city, we pretty well covered a lot of that area, but we made sure it was the whole area so we don't have to go through this again. And the other part of it is the audit reports keep pointing these out. Why are you keeping so many loans open for the same purpose? So there's a multiple purpose for doing this, and hopefully this will do it for until the city says, hey, enough, and we withdraw the loan, and it's called in 2 years. The provisions of the loan are still the same. It can be called by the city manager in 2 years and be paid off. So I'm the one that's been pushing it through, and the board did approve it.
Yeah. Well, I knew you were working on it, and I think it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to do, is get it all on the surface.
And for the record, too, I think it's good to get it on the record as to why.
Yes.
As you explained it.
Yes. That's the whole reason, is to collect everything from 2003 and get it in a basis for a going forward issue, rather than every 3 or 4 years you move to a different area, you got to go get another ordinance to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's not the purpose. Our revitalization is long-term in the city.
Right. Very good. Thank you, Reggie. Thank you. Okay, let's see. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I move for approval of this ordinance to consolidate the various vacant corporations and town loans into one single loan.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Anybody?
How do you know when you've paid one loan off?
How do you know
when? When you've paid one of these off.
Well, you would just have the consolidated loan, so you would just show the debt being paid down.
Yeah.
It's like a refinance.
Okay.
Yeah.
But these are different properties.
No, these are just loans.
Yeah.
There's not properties involved here. These are just the loans to renovate properties.
Yeah, these are just promissory notes.
Okay. Okay.
At this point, you call them, you're going to call the total amount of the loan. You can't break it apart.
No, you're correct. You call the total amount of the loan. That's correct.
Yeah, if you call it, yeah.
Okay. And the same was true on the other four ordinances also.
Yeah, you could call them, but you could call them individually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, if you call the big loan before, you shut it down anyway.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what dollar value you have on it in the interest of, and I think we have a very good track record. You know, I've been aware of it for the last 5 years, working with Habitat in the same areas that these houses are. So mm-hmm. It's a bookkeeping issue is what it amounts to.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Wade, thank you. Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Under petitions, Coker Springs Historic Marker Placement. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Wayne Jones is here tonight representing the B.G. Menard E.B. Camp, Sons of Confederate Veterans. They had pursued just a good amount of paperwork with the South Carolina Department of Transportation, and then they obtained that approval and then filed with the Design Review Board for approval of a historic marker for Coker Spring. The language for the proposed marker are on pages 104 and 105 of the materials that you have in your agenda packet tonight. The Design Review Board has unanimously approved the content of the language of the marker. There may be one exception, though. The Sons actually proposed to locate the marker in the vicinity of Ron Point on Whiskey Road, and Design Review Board unanimously voted against placement of the sign there and instead suggested potential locations at the Coker Spring site, at the Aiken County Historical Museum, or in the island found at Newberry Street at South Boundary. So for consideration for City Council tonight would be approval of the location of the historic marker commemorating our historic Coker Springs property. The marker having been approved, that's really a final decision by DRB. So it's actually the location of the marker that would be the issue for consideration tonight.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Earlier I met Mr. Jones. Wayne, would you like to say tell us about it a little bit? Thank you for your efforts on this, you and your team there.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Mayor, council members, it's a pleasure to be here tonight. On behalf of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, Menard E.B. Camp 1575, as a commander, we put on the Battle of Aiken every year. And in the process of doing that, we're able to raise some funds. And every year we try to find a historic project that we can go back to and give back to the community. This is a project that we had selected several years ago, and it's taken several years to get it to fruition to where we're at now. And in doing so, we tried to examine the different historic sites within Aiken County and where they were located at and how they had been marked. We found that there were 37 different places on the historic register, of which Coker Springs was number 10. We also found that there were 48 markers in Aiken County with the addition of the Coker Springs monument that will bring us up to 49. We tried to look at locations, and the first research I did was I went to a map. And when I pulled the map from the 175th, I tried to find Coker Springs, and it wasn't there. And that kind of bothered me. And I thought, well, how can somebody find a spring which was instrumental in the founding of Aiken? Because this spring was used not only for the Indians that lived here before we came here, but it was also a major point when the stagecoach went from Charleston and came through this way. It was a stopping point for the stagecoach. It was where the city of Aiken got their water initially. And until 1892, the city of Aiken got their water. At that time, there was a city resolution passed that said they would open artesian wells on Newberry Street. And after that, Coker Springs was left there. If you notice on the hallway, we've got a sign, a beautiful picture of Coker Springs out there. And it says, if you drink from the water there, no matter where you roam, you'll always come back to Aiken to visit. Well, like I said, in not being able to locate the marker, we wanted to find a way to do it properly. So we read the historic review, we read the paperwork that was submitted for the National Register, and we picked the location at the intersection of Coker Springs and Whiskey Road. The design review board was not pleased with that. They said it was a safety hazard. Just as we've discussed tonight, Whiskey Road is a very busy road. And I understand the concerns there. They also gave us an alternative location to look at, which was the intersection of South Boundary and Newberry, which means we would basically have to change the wording that's on the sign to read from 1/4 mile southwest to 1/2 mile southeast. And that's all. I've already contacted the Historical Society and the sign people. They say there's no problem with us doing that. Of all the locations that they listed, those two were the most appropriate because, number one, how can we visit a historical monument in the city of Aiken as important as Coker Springs is and not know how to get there? That's the sad part, and that's what we looked at. And we tried to make a decision on what we wanted to support. We wanted to give something back to the community, and this was our way of doing it. And at this time, if you've got any questions, I'll be more than happy to entertain those.
Well, we certainly thank you for your efforts very much. We appreciate this, bringing it this far.
You're okay with the move to where they have
some? I would. My first choice, of course, still is Whiskey and Coker Springs because it actually says Coker Springs there. And, you know, I was asked a question when I first stood up before the design review board, and they said, well, do you always read these signs when you go somewhere? And I said, if I have the opportunity, I do. But a lot of times, I know where I'm going before I ever get there. But the sign helps me find it. And I look at it from the standpoint, Whiskey Road and Coker Springs kind of tells me to go down the road there. However, if it's at the other location and we don't get the first location, my heart won't be broken.
You know, Wayne, you and I discussed briefly, very briefly, and I'm not sure we even, you heard one thought I had. As you go down Whiskey and you get to the Turon Point, On this side,
yes, sir,
which is on the side by Alan Corey's paddock, I think.
Yes, sir.
I think you could put the sign there. It would still be on Coker Spring Road.
Yes, sir.
Did you look at that?
I'm not arguing that at all. However, when we went before the design review board, there was an email from Pat and Alan Corey, and they objected to the location of the sign at that location.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, I'm not afraid to stand here and tell you what's good and bad there.
I would think it would be on right away. It must be somewhere.
Sir, the location that they're looking at putting the sign in the intersection of Whiskey and Coker Springs is on DOT right away, and DOT did give the approval for that location.
But I mean, even on the Corey side, are they saying there's no right of way there at all?
There should be a right of way on both sides of the road.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Yes, sir.
And if DOT would agree, then they could put it on the route there right away.
Yes, sir. I mean, I'm not arguing with you.
If that could be done, do you think that would be a better place or not?
It would be seen from both sides.
It would be on Coca Spring.
Yes, sir. I mean, I'm not objecting to that.
It wouldn't be on the wall side. It would be over there on the fence side where the bushes are and what have you.
Yes, sir.
You could see it.
As long as we could ensure that the marker is not, as we've often seen markers with the trees in front of them and to become so overgrown that, you know, it's no longer discernible.
Well, if it's DOT property, it ought to be clear.
Yes, sir.
It ought to be clear.
I have no objection with what you propose there either, sir.
Mr. Mayor, if I could please, that's right there at Ron Point is right where Whiskey Road takes that bend and that turn. And I have seen numerous accidents right there along that fenceway. Of course, the brick fence has been repaired three times, but I've also seen some horrible motorcycle accidents that's happened right there. And anything I think that perhaps is going to take somebody's eye off that road for even just a small amount of time could cause that to happen again. And I mean, certainly I'd love for this sign to be there, but that is a deep rooted concern of mine with it going in this location, I think.
And for those reasons, those were the reasons that we had deferred to the second location that was listed.
Okay.
You know, and we understand that, and we'd like to take that in consideration. Like I said, in addition to the fact that I presented what Mr. and Ms. Corey had to say about their concerns for it being located near their property as well.
That's fine. Very good.
I've got a quick question. Is this going to look like the standard historical marker?
Yes,
what's
sir. Are you familiar?
The verbiage
that you see there is the actual verbiage that will be there, with the exception, I think, the second line. If it moves from the initial location at Coker Springs and Whiskey Road to South Boundary and Newberry, the verbiage will change from 1/2 mile southwest, I believe is what it says, or 1/4 mile southwest. It will change to 1/2 mile southeast.
What's the size of the sign over here?
The sign is the same size as the one that's on for Hitchcock Woods. It's right at the end of South Boundary. The sign itself, the top of it will be 7 feet above the ground.
Okay.
The sign itself is approximately 2 feet wide by 3 or 4 feet tall.
And this is asking for it to be put on the island at Newberry and South Boundary?
Yes, sir.
And then where would it be visible? Who would see it?
I only have one. I took this photo this afternoon and did a Photoshop of an example of what it would look like. If you would be so kind as to pass that around, that way everybody can see what we're looking at as we pass it. In fact, I have two that would give a better depiction than what you actually have in your brochure.
Is it possible that we could just include that in the record?
Yes, sir. You certainly may.
Great.
Has there been any coordination with the people that live near that area that you put the marker up on?
I asked that question when I met with the design and review board, and I asked them if you disapprove this location and you say I can go to these other locations, am I going to have to come back before you again to pursue this? And they told me emphatically, no, sir.
City Council would determine the location, so that would be it.
Okay, but my question was, have you talked to people in Newberry?
I have not talked to those people on Newberry and South Boundary.
So I don't know if there's anybody here to address any concerns about it.
Wilkins is here.
Yeah.
Wilkins is
here. Mr. Burt's here.
Wilkins, would you like to speak?
Whenever you all can, Mr. Jones.
Well, come on up now. Be glad to have you up here.
I'm Wilkins Bird, 434 Berry Road. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of council.
I'll try to be brief. I have brought each of you a copy of the email letters from Pat Corey and Lucy Tower relating to the discussion before the Design Review Board. I would say that both of them, apart from emphatically opposing in main part for the reasons that Councilman Wells said, the safety issue at the Whiskey Road site, they both very directly say that they think the appropriate site for this is at the spring itself. I would add, while I'm on that point, that is my personal position for what it's worth. The spring is an interesting point. It's largely unexplained at its site. And I think because there is an extensive and interesting text on this, that's where it makes sense to read this, not a block and a half or two blocks away. Now, may I go a little further? Mr. Jones said that this was not on the map. Well, I'm not sure what map he looked at. The Historic Aiken Foundation produces a map of Aiken historic sites, which is widely used. I believe it is still available in readily at the Chamber of Commerce, and it clearly shows where Coker Springs is. Now, may I distribute these to you for what they're worth? These are the letters from the immediate neighbors, and
I think we pretty well decided not to use those 2 points of safety that you were talking about.
I would offer this notice because it also points out that the also points out the position, to the best of my knowledge, that is universally held by members of the neighborhood that it ought to be at the spring. If we jump to the alternative point down on South Boundary, I think we just have another version of the issue that we saw on Whiskey. Maybe not as dire a version, but as you realize, this is extensive language. People don't walk on that little triangle of land, and they don't safely walk along that edge of South Boundary either. Vehicular traffic is generally moving at a pretty good clip there. It'd be very undesirable if somebody stopped or slowed down substantially. And in the past, these archives historical markers, which are such an interesting feature of South Carolina, are only placed at a distance from the site itself for special reasons. Generally, they are because the site is not available by a public means of access. You know, it's on private property at some distant spot or whatever. There's a public road that goes right by Coker Spring, and that really is the cap of my comments, that there is every reason to put it there. Aiken's historic site maps show it. Anyone who can read Coker Spring presumably would realize that it is somewhere along that street, even if they didn't have the map. I'd be glad to respond to any questions that any member of council might have.
Wilkins, let me ask you a question. Are you concerned at all about traffic?
Well, yes, sir.
No matter where you put it, really.
Well, on Coker Springs Road, at the
traffic by the spring, coming
by the spring, exactly.
Because, as you know, that dirt road is not the best shape.
Not at all, sir.
And the equestrians really don't want it to be perfectly smooth necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because they don't want that much traffic. Mm-hmm. Let's face it. But
I think most traffic there would be pedestrian, and that's very appropriate, both for the road and for the chance to read the sign.
Mm-hmm.
They're very likely to stop at the end of Newberry, where it's paved there, and kind of park on the edge, I suspect, if they're driving there.
Yeah, and that's assuming they know it's there, and they have a map, and they're interested, and they're looking at places.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's going to be down. They're not going to know it's there.
Yeah, but the point's well taken.
I don't disagree with you. That was my first thought, too. I was down at a day looking, and I said, why don't we put it right here? And then I thought of some of these other reasons. Why is it going to be more traffic? And as you know, the horses come across the highway.
I don't think there's any reason to suggest that it will attract traffic to the Coker Springs site. It'll attract seriously interested, historically oriented individuals, but I don't think we're going to have a traffic jam on Coker Springs.
Okay, well, I just asked the question. I was interested in your comment about it.
Yes, sir. I do have an interest in traffic, but I think the more serious concern is people who might be distracted in the manner that Councilman Wells said up on Whiskey Road, be distracted on South Boundary, which is a very busy circuit, as I think you all know.
I remember when I first came here a few years ago, Henry Wade was kind enough to give us a tour of the city, and one of the things that did strike me was that we wound up at Coker Springs, and you know, you were really looking for some kind of a dialogue or some kind of a visual representation of what it really signified. She said it was a stagecoach stop, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the verbiage here, it's a lot more than that. Mm-hmm. And I think it should be probably close to the site itself.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Bird answered part of the question I was going to ask about if we put this some distance away, whether it's a quarter mile or a mile, are we setting a precedent for other items in the city? And I don't know if Mr. Bird would know the answer, or maybe Mr. Evans would. But most everything I've seen in the city is, you know, it was on this site, you know, in most cases around here. Now, in the county, there are some that says because of private property and other reasons, but I think we need to be cautious and set a precedent of putting stuff away, you know, from it for whatever reason we want to say.
Now, if it's helpful to you, Mr. Ebner, you know, the Hitchcock Woods sign is not right by Hitchcock Woods. The Neutrino project is over by the Chamber of Commerce. So, I mean, there are some that aren't, say, at this site, but there are others that say some distance from here.
If I might comment on that as well, and I hate to partially disagree with the city manager. Well, you'll understand what I mean in a moment, Richard. Number one, the partial disagreement is that Hitchcock Woods owns that parcel out by the road where the sign is, or so I understand. Part of the woods. But the other part relating to the Neutrino sign, which is a perfectly good comment, that sign was placed in front of the Chamber of Commerce, despite the fact that the science involved and described on it, as I understand, occurred out at the Savannah River site. But it is at a point which is not publicly accessible. And I am told by Susan French, the city's wonderful, able person involved with the Design Review Board administrator.
Mr. Bird, I want you to know I agree with you on that.
That it was placed there with the understanding that if at some future date the real Neutrino site out on the Savannah River site became accessible to the public, that the sign now in front of the Chamber of Commerce would be moved there. So it's a special case. And I think your point's well taken, that a precedent can be awkward. These things are not meant to be billboards to direct people across town to something there. One of the cleverer people at the Design Review Board hearing said, well, if we want to put it where a lot of people will see it, we ought to put it down on Lawrence Street at Richland Avenue.
Well, if I may, conversation with Mr. Joseph, Walt Joseph, that sign was particularly put there because there is information available at the chamber. So, if I'm not mistaken,
there now. Mm-hmm.
So it has a connection, and you know the chances of it ever wound up at Savannah Riverside are probably slim and none. But okay, thank you.
Yes, sir. Any other questions of Mr. Bird?
I have a question, Mr. Bear.
Okay.
Are we establishing a precedent if we place the sign on the street sign that says Coker Springs Road with a sign that says historic marker and an arrow pointing down that road?
you put the big sign that we're talking about here?
No, just a little sign, historic marker and an arrow.
Kind of like we did with Hopeland's and a couple of, it's something that we could look into.
Yeah. But place the marker on the site, but right. then on the street sign. Says,
interesting.
Yeah, I agree. The marker should be at the site.
Right.
It makes sense. It's well worded. And if you're going to the site, it'll explain exactly what it is.
Now, let me go back to Wayne now. Y'all have done such a fine job on this, Wayne. Can we reach a win-win situation here, you think, with this?
It's according to what you decide a win-win situation might be.
But by putting it at the site?
No, sir. That's not a win-win situation. And I'll tell you exactly why. When you don't know where a site is and you can't find a site, you can't read a sign. That's the bottom line. And that's what I found looking around Aiken. Now, the map, it may be on the historical map. The map I pulled was the 175th map. The concern with traffic, I agree with. I'm always concerned with traffic because I'm concerned with safety and lives. But he made a very interesting comment. He said the only people that are going to stop and read this sign and the only people that are going to pursue getting to that location are the people that are interested in the history, that are interested in finding the location. And all we're trying to do is give them a marker to lead them to that location. They're going to already know this history. There's a sign on the Coker Springs now that says it's on the National Register. Our camp used to maintain that place. We used to keep it spotless. And then over the years, the interest was lost and it went back to weeds. The Aiken County Museum has gone back in and cleaned it up and done a great job. And they're in the process of doing even more work down there. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to give a marker that will indicate this is where you need to go to be able to see this location. This is where you need to go to be able to see a part of history that is nowhere else. And like he said, the only people that will go here are the people that are interested in history. So will it increase traffic? Somewhat. By a lot? I don't know. Now the congestion on South Boundary and Newberry. If you'll remember, right where we're talking about putting it is where everybody parks their horse trailers and trucks. So there's plenty of room to pull off the road there and be able to read the sign if you want to read it. It's not a high congestion area. There's a lot of traffic that moves down the road, but there's plenty of room to stop and park a car if you want to walk up and read a sign. So, you know, when I look at those arguments, I have to kind of say I understand and I agree with them, but there's a fallacy to them that on the site is not really doing us any good if people can't find it to start with.
Don't you think those people are going to, they're going to use the historic, well, can you refer to a historic map that is located where?
Mr. Mayor, historically they have been located at the Chamber of Commerce as well as the city's certified guides have also, but there were plenty of them there, and I think that our Aiken continues to supply them there. Dr. Farmer, the current president was here. He couldn't stay, but I'm sorry, not able to respond to that. But that was a comment that Mrs. McCartney Rosen Duffy made, and I might add that Mr. Farmer also authorized me, and I failed to tell you that it was foundation's position that it should be at the site.
So the point is that they are available,
yes,
and that the chamber and maybe other places which can be publicized where they are, and people coming into Aiken looking specifically for the historic sites because they want to take that tour will surely know where to go to get them, or they'll ask questions. They'll get the maps, and it would be shown on the map as to where it is. So, you know, if the thought is that they're the only people that are going to go anyway, then they're interested, they're going to get the map. I'm trying to visualize what I would do.
Well, Mr.
if I'm that interested, I'm going to find a map somewhere that would show the various historic points in Aiken and then start visiting where I wanted to go. So,
if I may make a point, please.
Oh, certainly.
I'm an advocate of Southern history, and I'm a living historian, and I study the life and times of Major General Jeb Stuart. And I related this to the Design Review Board. The marker where General Stuart lost his life at Yellow Tavern is the intersection of 95 and 295 in Richmond, Virginia. Now, while I'm not saying Aiken and Richmond are the same, I want to illustrate a point. There are three markers within a half a mile of where Stuart died. One is on the actual location, which I just told you about. There are two more where they've had monuments erected. Now, there are three markers there. When I went to Richmond to follow his footsteps and to visit these sites, I didn't stop and read the signs. I had already read the signs online. I looked for the signs to tell me where to go. And that's what most historical people, the people who are interested in history, are going to be looking at. They're going to be looking for, how do I get to where I want to go when it's not readily available on the map? Now, enough about the maps. There it may be on the historical map. I won't argue that point. I know when I went to the Aiken County Museum of History, and I asked them, can you show me on a map where Coker Springs is? Nobody on their staff could produce a map for me that showed me where the site was. That's where I got my source document for that. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we can forget about the maps, because if they're on the maps...
Yes, sir.
Then
if there are maps, it needs to be on there.
Well, and there are. We've just heard that.
Yes, sir.
Several people out there are saying that.
Yes, sir.
So... I mean, let's deal with facts now. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's what I'm trying to get to.
Yes, sir.
If there's a map that shows these points, the map you had, I don't know what map it was, and I probably don't have any map that shows it myself, but the fact is, if somebody is interested in these points, these historic points, don't you think they're going to go and get a map that shows them in Aiken, if there is a map, and there is a map?
Well, the way I found most of mine was to go online and do the actual research.
Yeah, but let's get back to people coming to Aiken, looking at various sites. Don't you think they would probably go and search out a map somewhere, ask people?
And like I said, I went to the first place that I thought the map would be readily available.
Okay, but now we know. Now we know. This is new information.
I understand what you're saying. Yes, sir.
That has come up. And it's not new to a lot of folks, but it's new to this discussion this evening.
Yes, sir.
The maps are available.
Yes, sir.
And the point is on the map. So if there is a map available, and we agree, I think, that there is a map available.
Yes, sir.
Then I think these people would probably try to search it out and find it. And probably they'll go to the chamber or the museum, and maybe the museum now needs to get some of these maps. Because those are two places I would think you would go
first.
Well,
they ought to be at our tourism office as well.
Tourism?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah I'm sure they are. Yeah.
They are there?
They are.
Well, yeah. So I think the point is that you can find it on the map.
Mr. Mayor, I think Ms. Price, may have a very legitimate compromise to consider, and the city manager mentioned it. We have a sign that points to Bank Street. We have a sign, a small one, that points to Rye Patch. And we have, I forgot the other one, but there's several of them right along there that are, let's say 8 of 12 by 36 sign. It just has an arrow on it and says that way.
Yeah.
Is that the compromise to put the sign at the Coker Springs and put one at Coker Springs Road and at Banksia, put it on the same side as the Banksia this way? So I just remind us that, that's something that maybe is a good compromise.
Just to repeat this, Mayor, I've got a Chamber of Commerce 2010 and 11th Street map, and I could not see. I can see the Coker Springs Road, but there's no marker. There's a marker just beyond it. The Racing Hall of Fame, which is just a little bit beyond it. But
what we're hearing, there are maps that contain the historic sites.
Yeah, that's what Mr. Burns.
And I think that's what people need to find. And perhaps it needs to be advertised more with the public.
What was your reaction to the suggestion proposed with the Culquhar Springs Road sign at the corner of Whiskey and Culquhar Springs Road have a sign that says historic marker and an arrow pointing to Culquhar Springs?
If I could be assured that that sign would go up there, it might be something I could take back to my board and have them consider. But there is no... The problem we've had in everything that we've looked at is there's nothing that gives us a warm fuzzy knowing somebody that's looking to search history is going to find this location with reasonable ease. And that's all we're trying to give them.
But there would be an arrow and something saying historic marker and an arrow.
I understand, and like I said, but I haven't, there's no way to guarantee something like that would happen. If I had some kind of guarantee that something like that would happen, then I could take this back to the board for reconsideration. I can only come to you with what I have been approved by my board to present. I'm just like you. I've got a board that I have to answer to as well, and I've been told what my limitations are, and those are the things I have to limit.
Let me just check with our Director Frommer. Can we put that on the street sign?
I think since the signs are on a state highway, we would have to get permission from the
Columbia, right. But I mean, we could make a sign like that. We have that capability.
But we'd have to get permission.
Okay. So we could make that file.
Right. And see, that's the reason we had the approval from DOT before we ever went to Design Review Board on the initial location.
Well, we could certainly make a sign that indicates there's a historic marker and get that quarter mile distance and get, you know, certainly apply to DOT to see if we can put that on the street sign out there at Whiskey.
Well, if we continue this till we do that, and I agree with him, we need to have something, if you will, in writing and approved through DRB or whatever the secondary sign. And do we need to continue this till we do that?
We can certainly, if that's the thing.
No, if that's acceptable.
Yes.
I agree with your point. If you don't put it in writing, sometimes it falls through the
floor. I'm trying to bend over backwards to work with everybody. I mean, I understand their concern. I understand council's concern. Mm-hmm. But please understand our concern. We're looking at putting a bill for a $2,000 sign.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to make sure that we get our money's worth. When we put it somewhere, people are going to be able to find it, and it's going to be effective.
Mm-hmm. And we could certainly, if that's the sense of council, we can make that application and bring it back once we have heard back from DOT.
All right, do I need to make a motion?
Yeah, let's have a motion and a second to continue.
The city attorney can
be a motion to carry
over. Wade has a comment before we do the motion.
Wade? Yes, sir.
Wade Brody, 422 York Street. With all the discussion about maps, it seems to me it would be appropriate to assign the task of determining the various locations of these signs around the city and try to get those listed on the map. The Chamber of Commerce does a map. I don't know if the city does one, but there's two or three maps are vacant. So, you know, if we could get some coordination and list these historical markers would be beneficial to newcomers coming to town.
Well, my understanding is there's already a map. Is that right, Wilkins?
Mr. Mayor, there is a map, but it does not focus in the way that Wade is suggesting. It shows a large series of historical sites in the city, Culquhar Springs alone. It does not, as Wade is suggesting, show markers in particular. So what he's suggesting is an additional new idea.
Does that list then that it shows, the map shows, does that also give the address, road address, or any kind of an address? Like Culquhar Spring Road.
It's been some time since I've seen it. I'm sure that the answer is yes as to certain structures, buildings, certain houses. It may not be true that everything. But in general, that's the case.
Okay.
That's what it's on the regular map.
Well, that's a good suggestion, Wade. I thought we had it, but maybe we don't have it clear enough or anything.
And, Mayor, what we can do when we bring this matter back, we'll certainly have historic maps for council to review.
Yeah, I was just going to suggest that, yeah.
If I could, I'll have to get Mr. City Attorney to help me with the motion, but I'd like to include both putting the marker that the Sons of Confederacy proposed, put that at the site, and then have a secondary sign at Coker Springs Road, similar, if you will, to the Banksia sign, says Historical Museum.
Could we not just have a motion to carry over, and then you could make the motion once we have a full information?
All right. Move that we carry this.
I'm not sure they're going to be comfortable with the city going forward until they actually get that comfort level back from the state that it's going to be okay with that sign.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get. Who is going to?
If we could just carry it over, we'll carry the water.
Let's continue.
All right, the city's going to carry the bill.
Let's continue it.
So all I need to do is ask for continuation.
No carry over. It's a motion to carry.
I move that we continue this, and the city will follow up.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor. Passes unanimously. Okay. That's the end of our agenda, I think.
Mayor, if I could, I did want to pass out for council's information, if each council member will just take one and pass it. We have made the submission to the U.S. Department of Justice for pre-clearance for the referendum on for the ballot on November 18th on the question of whether we should go to single-member districts. Okay. This does not include the attachments, but it does refer to the relevant information from the attachments was prepared by Jim Holly.
Okay. Wayne,
pardon me.
Again, thank you. Thank you for your team there and what you're doing.
We do appreciate what y'all have done.
So I think we will have a win-win situation here. Okay, thanks. Okay. We are dismissed, adjourned.
I think Richard had something to say.
Richard, I'm sorry. Come on. Just a minute, everybody. You don't want to miss this.
Just one comment to Mayor and City Council. I was delighted that you agreed with the USCA that you allowed them to put up their banner. Just for your information, they have opened their doors to the Municipal Election Commission. We've used their facilities for elections in the past, and including their computer system. So this was a good way of reciprocating, I think. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Well, it's always good to be able to do that, work together, teamwork. Okay. Good evening, everyone. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you.